Welcome to our deep dive.
Yeah.
This time we're
Diving in.
diving headfirst
Up first.
into the Carpalus Manuscript Museum podcast archives.
So much good stuff there.
They've got a treasure trove of historical documents,
Absolutely.
and we're going to unearth some truly fascinating stories.
We are.
It's incredible
It really is.
to think about the moments these documents represent,
Yeah.
from the invention of photography to the audacity of early flight, all the way to the chilling reality of the atomic age.
It's amazing, isn't it?
These stories remind us that history isn't just dates and names.
No.
It's a tapestry woven from real human experiences.
It really is.
It really is like holding a time machine in our hands.
I love that.
And, speaking of capturing moments in time,
Yeah.
let's start with a document that changed how we see the world forever.
Okay.
The announcement of Louis Daguerre's photographic process in 1841.
I love this one.
Imagine a world without photographs.
Can you imagine?
It's amazing how quickly this invention,
It really is.
born from a fusion of old ideas,
Right.
reshaped our relationship with the visual world.
It's true.
Okay, so I get that Daguerre didn't just pull photography out of thin air,
No.
but what were these old ideas he was working with?
Well, on one hand, you had the camera obscura,
Okay.
basically a pinhole camera that projected images.
Right.
On the other, you had the knowledge that certain materials were sensitive to light.
Okay.
Daguerre's genius was combining these and figuring out how to make those captured images permanent.
And here's where it gets really cool.
Okay, tell.
He used salt to do it.
What?
You know the stuff we sprinkle on our food? Common table salt was the key to stabilizing those early photographs.
Wild.
It just goes to show that sometimes groundbreaking discoveries come from the most unexpected places.
I know, right? It's amazing what a little salt can do.
Of course, we can't forget Joseph Nicéphore Niépce,
Right.
Daguerre's rival turned partner,
Of course.
who played a crucial role in this photographic race.
He did.
Little competition always seems to fuel innovation, doesn't it?
Always.
But for us today, the real impact is how deeply photography is woven into the fabric of our lives.
That's true.
Family albums, news photos,
Social media.
even selfies.
Yep.
It's hard to imagine a world without it.
I know.
How do you think our relationship with photography has evolved over time?
That's a great question.
It's interesting to consider how photography has shaped not only how we document our lives, but also how we see the world and even ourselves.
Yeah, and you think about.
Think about the rise of social media. We're
Exactly.
constantly curating our image, presenting a specific version of ourselves through
All
photographs.
the time. Yeah, it's crazy.
You're right. It's like photography has taken on a whole new level of social currency.
It really has.
Okay, from capturing images to defying gravity.
Okay.
Let's talk about another incredible feat of human ingenuity.
Let's do it.
Jacques-Alexandre César Charles and his pioneering work with hydrogen gas balloons.
I love this story.
We often think of hot air balloons as whimsical,
Yeah, they are kinda.
but Charles's work was nothing short of revolutionary.
Oh, absolutely.
Imagine this,
Okay.
August 26, 1783.
Okay.
King Louis VI, the king himself,
Wow.
awards Charles a gold medal,
A gold medal.
a royal seal of approval for his invention.
That's amazing.
A gold medal from the king.
Ah.
Talk about a stamp of approval. But this wasn't just any hot air balloon,
Yeah,
right?
it wasn't.
What made his so special?
This was cutting-edge technology for its time.
Okay.
Instead of hot air, Charles used hydrogen gas,
Oh, wow.
which was much more buoyant.
Interesting.
Picture a silk balloon
Okay.
meticulously coated in gum to trap the volatile gas with a specially designed valve for control.
Wow.
Add in a net and hoop supporting a basket, and you've got yourself a marvel of engineering.
I bet the spectacle of it all was just incredible.
I know, right?
Can you imagine being there
Oh, yeah.
on August 27th at Champ-de-Mars in Paris,
Wow.
witnessing that first flight?
That would have been something. Dawn breaking, a light rain falling, and a massive crowd gathered with a mixture of awe and trepidation.
I bet.
And then the balloon ascends, soaring to an astounding 3,300 feet.
Wow.
It must have been a truly breathtaking sight.
Breathtaking, maybe, but I bet the landing wasn't quite as graceful.
It wasn't a smooth one.
I read somewhere that villagers mistook it for a monster.
They attacked it with pitchforks.
No, they didn't.
They did.
Oh my gosh, from a royal ceremony to a pitchfork-wielding mob, what a dramatic turn of events.
You know, a little comical.
Right.
But even with this dramatic and slightly comical ending,
Yeah.
Charles's balloon flight was a pivotal moment. It ignited the world's imagination, fueling the enduring dream of flight and laying the groundwork for the future of aviation.
It's incredible to think that our modern marvels of air travel can trace their roots back to that one audacious flight.
No, it's amazing.
Speaking of audacious, let's turn our attention to a document that carries the weight of history on every page.
Okay.
The Agreement on the Use of the Atomic Bomb.
Yeah.
It's a sobering thought, isn't it?
It is.
After the devastation of World War II,
right,
the U.S. and Great Britain found themselves holding the power to unleash unimaginable destruction.
Yeah, unimaginable.
It must have been a heavy burden.
It must have been a really difficult thing to grapple with. To possess that kind of power.
Yeah.
And the agreement itself,
right,
reflects the gravity of the situation.
Okay.
Essentially, both nations pledged not to use the atomic bomb against any other country without mutual consent.
A safety check on a weapon of unimaginable power.
Exactly.
Did this agreement hold up over time?
Well, you know, there were revisions and amendments, of course.
Right, because things change.
Things always change. In 1947 and 1948, the restrictions on the bomb's use were actually eased a bit.
Interesting.
But then in 1950, we see a glimmer of hope.
Okay.
Prime Minister Attlee visits Washington, and together with Truman, they release a joint statement expressing their shared hope that the atomic bomb would never be used again.
Wow, so they actually said that.
They did.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Hope that, thankfully, has largely held true.
It has.
This wasn't just a symbolic gesture, though.
No.
It marked the beginning of international cooperation in the face of these unprecedented global threats.
Exactly.
So this was really setting a precedent then.
It was a huge precedent.
For how we approach.
Right.
These existential threats.
Absolutely. And I think it continues to this day.
Yeah.
It underscores the importance of diplomacy, communication, and finding common ground.
Right.
Even, and perhaps especially,
yeah,
when dealing with the most destructive forces known to humankind.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
From the complexities of the atomic age, let's shift gears to a time when the balance of power in Europe was in constant flux.
Okay.
1570 France.
Okay.
We're focusing on a letter penned by King Charles IX himself.
Wow.
A message to King Philip II of Spain.
Okay.
It's a fascinating look at the high-stakes game of diplomacy during this tumultuous period.
It really is. And, you know, this was a time when communication was so different,
right,
so much slower and more uncertain,
yeah,
and yet the stakes were incredibly high.
Right.
The fate of nations could hinge on a single letter.
Wow. And in this case, King Charles, he's facing religious turmoil within his own borders, right?
He is.
He feels this need to reassure Philip II.
Of course.
That France remained a strong and unified force.
He did.
He couldn't appear weak.
No, not at all.
Because any sign of weakness could have emboldened Spain to make a strategic move.
Absolutely. Spain might have tried to take advantage of the situation. Yeah, so it was a delicate balancing act.
So in a way, it's about managing perceptions, right?
Exactly.
Controlling the narrative.
Right.
And preventing rumors or misinformation from sparking an unwanted war.
Which is still something that happens today, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at
the battle against...
The constant battle against misinformation in our modern media landscape.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
The fight for truth, the need to control the narrative. It's a timeless struggle, especially in the realm of international relations.
It never goes away, does it?
No, it doesn't. Speaking of struggles, our next document takes us to a much darker chapter in history.
Okay.
The French Revolution.
Right.
Imagine holding a piece of paper that represents the fate of a life.
Wow.
This 1793 death warrant.
Right.
Signed by the infamous Antoine Quentin Fouquier-Tinville.
Oh, yeah, I know that name.
Offers a chilling glimpse into the heart of the Reign of Terror.
Yeah, he was the chief prosecutor of the Revolutionary Tribunal, wasn't he?
He was.
His name alone kind of sends shivers down your spine.
Oh, absolutely. And he presided over countless executions during that brutal period.
That is a brutal time.
And here, on this very document, you see his signature ordering the death of a certain Debaintis.
Debaintis? What a name.
Debaintis. A name practically lost to history, except for this chilling piece of paper.
Wow.
It's haunting, isn't it?
It is.
To think that this single document represents a life extinguished.
Right.
A story you'll never fully know.
We'll never know the full story.
It really makes you reflect on the human cost of revolutions.
It does.
It does. The speed and often arbitrary nature of justice, especially during times of such upheaval, is a stark reminder of how easily power can be abused.
Yeah, power can be intoxicating.
It can. And how quickly the tides can turn.
That's right.
One day you're a citizen, the next you're gone. From the weighty matters of life and death, let's turn our attention to the mysteries that lie beyond this earthly realm.
Okay.
This next story revolves around none other than Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Sherlock Holmes.
The brilliant mind behind Sherlock Holmes.
Of course.
And his fascination with the afterlife.
Really? I didn't know that about him.
It's a side of Doyle that many people don't associate with the master of logic and deduction.
Right.
But even he, it seems, couldn't resist the allure of the unknown, the mysteries that even Sherlock Holmes couldn't solve.
That's so interesting. And did he believe in it? Do we know?
Well, after Doyle's death in 1930, his wife held a seance just 4 months later, hoping to connect with him in the afterlife.
Wow, a seance.
Yes. And what really struck me was the detail about the cross Mrs. Doyle brought with her.
Oh, interesting. Tell me.
It wasn't just any cross.
Okay.
She believed it had protective powers.
Really?
Shielding her from any trickery or deception from the spirit world.
Wow. So she really believed.
It speaks to the depth of her grief, don't you think?
It does, yeah.
Her longing to bridge that divide between the living and the dead, even if it meant embracing the unconventional.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It's a deeply human need to find comfort and connection, even in the face of loss.
It really is. And you know what's interesting about this?
What's that?
Doyle was actually close friends with Harry Houdini.
Oh, wow. The escape artist.
The renowned skeptic and escape artist.
That's incredible.
Two brilliant minds, each grappling with the big questions of life, death, and what might lie beyond in their own way.
I love that. From the afterlife to a place that evokes a very different kind of reverence.
Okay.
The Washington National Cathedral.
Ah, a perfect transition.
We're shifting our focus from the mysteries of the afterlife to the legacy we leave behind in this world.
Okay.
And this next document, a letter from October 21st, 1936, speaks volumes about the impact one life can have.
Whose life?
This is a letter offering burial within the cathedral walls.
Wow.
Extended to Anne Sullivan Macy, the remarkable teacher of Helen Keller.
Oh, wow. That's an incredible honor. Oh,
that's an incredible honor. It's not every day that someone receives an offer like that.
No, it's not.
What does it say about the impact Anne Sullivan Macy had, not just on Helen Keller, but on the world?
That's a great question. You know, the letter itself actually states that an offer like this is reserved for very few individuals.
Okay.
Individuals who've made truly extraordinary contributions to society.
Right.
It recognizes the profound impact Anne Sullivan Macy had on education, on changing perceptions of disability, and on inspiring hope in countless lives.
And what I find particularly touching,
yeah,
is the mention of Helen Keller herself. The letter anticipates that one day she, too, would be offered a final resting place within the cathedral.
Wow, they were inseparable, weren't they?
They were. Their lives, their achievements were so deeply intertwined.
They were.
And it's a reminder that sometimes the greatest legacies are built on collaboration, on the power of two individuals who complement and uplift one another.
That's a beautiful thought. Speaking of leaving your mark on the world.
Yes.
Let's talk about a woman who certainly made her presence known, albeit in a very different sphere.
Okay.
Polly Adler. The infamous madam of 1920s New York City.
Oh, Polly Adler. Her name alone conjures up images of the roaring 20s.
Right.
A time of prohibition speakeasies and a vibrant, if sometimes illicit, nightlife.
It was a wild time. And the document we have here offers us a glimpse into that world.
What is it?
Her signed arrest card.
An arrest card. So not exactly a glamorous portrait.
No, not exactly. It's the grittier side of her story.
Okay, I like it. Tell me more.
Well, you've got her aliases. Her occupation listed as lingerie business.
Okay.
A rather transparent euphemism, wouldn't you say?
Right.
And even physical details like her height and weight.
So interesting how these mundane details just paint such a vivid picture.
They do, don't they?
It's like a snapshot of a life lived on the edge, navigating the complexities of a city, grappling with changing morals, and a healthy dose of lawlessness.
She was arrested 13 times.
13 times?
Only served one 30-day sentence.
Wow, what for?
Showing lewd motion pictures.
Oh, my goodness. She sounds like a woman who knew how to play the game.
She did, and she got away with a lot. You know what I love about all these documents?
What's that?
It's sometimes these seemingly mundane objects. An arrest card, a letter, a signed document.
Right.
That offer the most intriguing glimpses into the past.
I completely agree. It just reminds us that history is about real people, real lives. With all their complexities and contradictions.
It's about the messy reality of being human.
Yes, it is. Great. Which brings us to our next document. A poignant reminder of the power of individual action to spark lasting change.
I like it.
We're talking about Florence Nightingale and her tireless work during the Crimean War.
Florence Nightingale, the lady with the lamp.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She's practically synonymous with nursing itself.
She is.
But her legacy goes far beyond a single image, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. She transformed nursing from a haphazard profession into a respected field emphasizing sanitation, compassion, and meticulous care. And this artifact we have here, a brooch, speaks volumes about the impact she had.
What's so special about this brooch?
It was designed by Queen Victoria and Prince Albert themselves.
Wow.
Specifically to honor Nightingale's contribution.
This is a big deal.
Huge! Imagine receiving such a token of recognition.
I know.
A testament to the profound impact your work has had on the world.
It speaks to the power of one person to enact real change to inspire generations to come.
It does. And speaking of pivotal moments in history.
Yes.
Our final document is like holding a time machine in our hands.
Okay, tell me more.
A personal invitation to Napoleon Bonaparte's coronation in 1804.
Wow, to be a fly on the wall for that.
Can you imagine?
That's incredible. And this wasn't just a mass-produced invitation.
No, no, this was the real deal. It bears the signature of Napoleon's right-hand man, Hugues Bernard Moret.
Okay.
The Duc de Bassano.
Wow, and it was personally addressed to...
A man named Nogaret, the administrator of Hérault.
Nogaret, the administrator of Hérault. Why does that name sound so familiar?
It's a small detail, but it highlights the meticulous orchestration of this event.
Yeah.
Napoleon understood the importance of symbolism.
Right.
Of ensuring representation from all corners of his newly formed empire.
Of course.
Every detail, from the guest list to the grandeur of the ceremony, was carefully calculated to solidify his power and legitimize his rule.
It's a good reminder that even events we see as inevitable historical milestones were carefully crafted, meticulously staged performances in their own right.
Well, it's been an incredible journey, hasn't it?
It really has.
From the invention of photography to the grandeur of Napoleon's coronation, these documents have given us such a rich tapestry of human experience. They've shown us the power of human ingenuity, the resilience of the human spirit, and the enduring search for meaning and connection that unites us all.
And it makes you realize, doesn't it?
What's that?
That the everyday objects we take for granted, a photograph, a handwritten letter, a ticket stub, could one day be the artifacts that tell our stories, offering future generations a glimpse into our lives and our times.
It's true. We're all making history every day, even if we don't realize it.
It really makes you think about our own place in history, doesn't it? What will be the documents, the objects, the stories that define our era for future generations?
That's the question, isn't it?
It is. It's a question worth pondering, and we hope this deep dive has sparked your curiosity to uncover more hidden stories from the past. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.